Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Napa Know-How.
At Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers, get a $25 prepaid Visa card when you get any Napa automotive battery. It's the best deal for some of the best batteries from some of the best car people around. But we might be a little partial. Anywho, pick up any Napa automotive battery and save $25. Do it yourself or have it done for you. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers, while supplies last, offer ends 8/31/20.
People notice a healthy smile, but maybe you have tooth sensitivity, bleeding gums, or acid-weakened enamel. Sensodyne, Parodontax, and Pronamel are trusted specialty toothpastes created to help improve your oral health. For tooth sensitivity, choose Sensodyne. Bleeding gums, get Parodontax. For acid-weakened enamel, Pronamel is the toothpaste for you. Sensodyne, Parodontax, and Pronamel, trusted specialty toothpastes to help bring home your healthy smile. Visit Ibotta to earn cash back.
Attention sports fans, award-winning sports columnist and ESPN commentator Woody Page is putting down the chalkboard and picking up the mic for the Woody Page podcast on Podcast One Sportsnet. Join Woody each week as he takes on sports and pop culture with his roster of famous and even legendary guests from the worlds of sports and entertainment. Drop the chalk and download new episodes of the Woody Page podcast every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. Yahoo has officially released their daily fantasy football contest. They have a $1 million contest with no management fee and $100,000 to first place, meaning more money goes back to you, the players. They are pro player. We love that. 10 entry max, so you're not going to be playing against people with 150 lineups like other sites. Yahoo also has a $100,000 guaranteed contest, so there are lots of prizes out there. If you're just getting started with daily fantasy football, join the free to enter Yahoo Cup and play all season long. It's free, but there's $150,000 in weekly and season long prizes, and if you get the perfect lineup, you get $1 million for free. Get started now at yahoo.com/daily fantasy. The September 12th edition of PFF Forecast. We are not breaking news, but we're hopping on right after some breaking news with Sam Darnold. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about Thursday night football. We're going to pick our lock of the week. We're going to have that discussion. And we're going to close out with, as we normally do, some good stories from the Cincinnati Y. We've got some good stuff from week one that will fold in to all of the different games that we discuss here. A lot of interesting things about coaching decisions and how players played relative to what they thought or what people thought they saw on TV. The last time we were on the podcast, I had my water bottle up here and I was searching for some hatred on the YouTube comments because there are a lot of them.
Dude, it's so much fun.
It's really great. You guys do a fantastic job.
The only comments worth reading are the ones from your mother or the ones from the haters.
So someone was like something about how I can't believe how arrogant and pretentious this person is. Just look at the water bottle that he has.
You can tell a lot from a man.
Tell a lot
from his water bottle.
From the water bottle. Now, I will say this. These water bottles are very expensive. I would never actually spend my money on them. I got it as a gift a few years back. I've actually had this for like 3 years because I know how expensive they are, and there's no way that I'm ever going to buy myself one. Yeah. So at least I've maintained it. You have a coffee mug with you in every single episode that we do, and no one seems to call you out for that.
That's right. And I actually like drink coffee on the way to the Y. I drink coffee all the time.
You
bring
a coffee mug with you to the men's locker room and leave it there.
Is there a problem?
Nope. I'm just pointing that out.
Okay. Oh, wow. They already took it. Okay. Yeah. So the breaking news that we have today, it just came through. Luckily, you know, we printed our picks like 2 hours ago because we did have this. But Jets quarterback Sam Darnold has mono and will not play Monday night. It'll be Trevor Siemian.
Can we pause for a second? So, mono. I didn't know. I thought mono was. I'm in high school. I kissed a few too many people that hadn't, you know, whatever. And or like,
where did
I didn't
where
know
did Darnold go to college?
Mono.
Where did Darnold go to college? And where does he currently live?
He went to USC. I just presume he lives in New York.
Yeah.
He kind of looks like he's 18. I mean, I'm just saying.
I mean, NYU is replete with people. We're going to be inclusive.
People.
We're going to be inclusive here. Replete with people who I'm imagining he could share relations.
So you think he caught it from going to too many NYU social events? I just think it's very strange that he got mono. That sucks. Obviously,
yeah. If you got Cleveland -2.5 or -140, you're very happy in their bounce back week. But that'll be a game we talk about pretty soon here.
The thing with the Jets offense was it was so bad that their efficiency running the ball was actually better than their efficiency passing the ball, which is what you get when you average 4.3 yards per pass.
Well, and did you think, because I actually looked at Darnold, somebody pointed this out on Twitter, Darnold's grade was like in the mid to upper 60s. Mm-hmm. I don't think Darnold played terribly. He made some throws. He could have led Robbie Anderson on that last drive and probably won the game. But it was one of those things where I'm laying it at the feet of Gase more than I am Darnold. Darnold completed the passes. They were just short. They weren't like, I mean, it wasn't like he had a ton of negatively graded plays. It was just one of those things where that whole offense was so inept that I struggled to put it all on the quarterback's shoulders.
The weird thing about that is part of that has to be the confidence you would think that Adam Gase has in Sam Darnold, right? That's the only thing that I can sort of think of because the offense was really terrible. We'll talk about that game in a second, but Sam Darnold replaced by Trevor Siemian. It's been too long since we've seen Trevor Siemian play in the NFL. I'm just going to call an out route pick six by Trevor Siemian here.
Was the Vikings backup a season ago, but Kirk Cousins took every snap. So he has not played since the 2017 season in which he was benched for an ineffective play in favor of Brock Osweiler. So we have a fun one Monday night.
That bodes well. I mean, let me ask you this. If you are a Browns fan or supporter in any shape or form, are you more worried or less worried now? Because I'm more worried.
Yeah.
This would be the Brownsiest thing planet Earth.
If they lost if they lose on Monday,
what happens if they lose on Monday?
Well, the problem is the toothpaste is already out of the tube in many ways. Like Beckham is not wearing a watch the rest of the season. At that point in time, like he's already stood out.
What is Freddie Kitchens doing?
Yeah.
What is going on?
Well, and not only that, but like it's not as though they're playing like the AFC North looks tough. I mean, Pittsburgh struggled the other night, but we know that they're probably going to be okay. Baltimore was amazing on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. Granted, Cincinnati was far more competitive than the markets gave them credit for in Seattle against the Seahawks. So, and if you're 0-2, you're 0-2 in games that like the Titans aren't considered like, you know, world beaters, and then the Jets are one of the worst teams in the AFC. So if you start 0-2 against those two teams,
do you think anyone gets fired?
I have a hard time, but the Browns fired Shurmur after 1 year, Pettine after 1 year.
History just keeps on repeating. Yeah. I just can't. To me, the Odell Beckham wearing a watch in a game thing is an indictment of the way that the organization is run, the standards that are set. I can't believe that happened. I just can't believe it. It's just stunning to me how stupid that is. And I'm a fan of players doing what they want to do, but you're a team that is under a microscope. You have to know the way that looks, and you have to, after everything that's happened, want to go out there and say, hey, this is all about football. And wearing a watch on the football field isn't all about football. So I don't know. Those are my 2 cents. I love Odell. I love Baker Mayfield. I really hope they get it together. Anyways. Thursday Night Football, let's start there. We have two teams that looked absolutely terrible.
Yep.
Cam Newton handed a victory to the Rams. The Rams tried to hand it back. He said, nope, you take this one. Yeah. I don't want it. I don't want anyone that has me on their fantasy team to do well. Apparently it wasn't Norv Turner. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers quite literally served up a victory to the San Francisco 49ers. In the form of pick sixes from Jameis Winston.
Jimmy Garoppolo last week.
Oh, we said we were
had the
talk about this.
Lowest.
Sir, please.
Okay. Well, Tampa Bay's defense played extremely well last week, holding the other team's quarterback to the lowest percentage of positive graded throws in the NFL. And yet,
you didn't want to waste him in a game he didn't need to.
That's right. That's true. That was like Tebow in 2011. Mm-hmm. He only played in the big games. Jameis, every time he dropped back to throw, dumped about 3/4 of an expected point. He had zero big time throws, and 8% of his throws were turnover worthy. His positively graded throw rate and negatively graded throw rate were the same. He's usually in that 30% range on positively graded throws. He was under 20% last week. So he really did struggle.
I mean, that's
despite
terrible.
The fact that the defense, frankly, like, we think of San Francisco as a pretty innovative offense with some good players, and Tampa Bay played pretty well on Sunday, especially given the fact that because their quarterback was so inept, they were, you know, they weren't playing from a position of strength. So their defense was, I think, a little bit encouraging. On the other side, Cam Newton on early down pass plays dumped half of an expected point per pass play. And so despite being relatively decent defensively, helped out a little bit by the Rams struggling, you know, Carolina couldn't get a win at home in a position where, you know.
I mean, Christian McCaffrey was every bit as generational as you would have wanted him to be. What I thought was really interesting about that game, watching it back, was so Christian McCaffrey does have about as good of a performance as you can possibly have as a running back. If you take the analog of that for a quarterback, there's no way that team loses, right? Mm-hmm. It really showed me how the effort that, you know, a player in that position can put in doesn't manifest itself in victories as much as the effort that, you know, it actually takes to do that well, which I thought was kind of interesting. The Panthers' coverage, I thought, was decent, but I was really not impressed with Jared Goff overall in that game. I thought it was
he was not very good.
Not great. So this one is kind of predictably Panthers -7. Not really a huge, I mean, that's a tough one, right?
Because on the Sunday pod, we said that we probably wouldn't have a pick on that game, and that's exactly what ended up happening.
Seven is tricky, right? The Panthers are the better team. I feel pretty confident in saying they're playing at home. And they're favored on Thursday night, which is usually a recipe for disaster. I even think back to that Panthers-Eagles Thursday night game from a couple years back where, you know, you're like, well, the Eagles are pretty good and, you know, whatever. I don't know. Weird things happen on Thursday night football is my point that I'm trying to make. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to say, okay, well, I'm not going to take the game against the spread, I'm not going to take the total to 49, which is
a little. We're actually a little bit like a fractions of percent above break even on the under. That's not something I'm.
You enjoy betting unders?
I don't enjoy betting unders.
Go forth.
But there, as you're alluding to, there.
Well, what I'm alluding to is the fact that you can't watch the Thursday night game without betting on it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. What are you going to bet on?
Well, there are some props that I like. And I found these on an old friend of ours.
Somebody that I used to know. Great song,
somebody.
Man.
Okay. So I think
there was a time in life where I played that song.
Dude, that song was fire.
An egregious
amount.
Yeah,
same here. Same. I was older than you, so it was more embarrassing for me at the time to play it as much as you, but still.
I wonder how they're doing. We should contact them, see if we can get that as the song.
Yes, thank you. So McCaffrey's rushing yards prop is at 88.5.
Don't
right
you
now.
Dare. I know where you're going with this.
And I love the under.
Oh,
there.
God. You hate. Why do you hate Christian McCaffrey?
I don't hate Christian McCaffrey. I like him. I think in this particular setting, though, last week he got 100% or near 100% of the snaps in the running game for the Panthers. I think on a Thursday night game, with him being as important as he is to the team, you know, 3 days of rest only, I think he gets fewer of those. Okay. And I think he gets more in terms of the pass game, right? We know that, you know, the Rams were one of the worst run defenses in the NFL last season. So he had some success against them. Tampa Bay is a little bit closer to average there. So I just like the under there. It's +100. So I think there's just some value even from the numbers perspective. Another under that I like before we get to the overs is DJ Moore under 5 receptions at -105.
Love that.
I think there's a lot of mouths to feed in the backfield, and I think McCaffrey's success in the passing game last week is going to maybe make Newton and company target him more. also Newton simply is not very good at targeting receivers anymore.
Well,
and so there's that.
I've got another thing for you. You could tell Cam was pissed about not throwing the ball downfield. But here's the other thing. Cam Newton's also not an accurate thrower of the football.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you combine the two things, more downfield passes, not accurate throwing the football, I can't imagine that gives you a ton of opportunities to make catches. So I agree with you. I think that Christian McCaffrey, heavily involved in the passing game. Look, I'm doing my best to get excited about the props here. So, but the one that I do really like are the overs.
Mm-hmm.
And a particular person that I am a fan of going over this particular week is Mr. Godwin here. So the total, his over under 61.5 receiving yards, -115. So are some other people thinking similarly, but
yeah. And the slot cornerback for Carolina, former Tampa Bay Buccaneer, Javion Elliott, who is not particularly good.
Nope.
They have not had a much luck replacing Captain Munnerlyn, who himself was not replacing his old self a season ago. And Godwin has taken the majority of the snaps in the slot when the Buccaneers go to three wide receivers. So that's a pretty solid play, I think. The other thing is O.J. Howard struggled last week with, you know, drops and fumbles. So some of the inside routes might go
understatement
more to Godwin. And then lastly,
the most predictable thing you've said all week.
Yeah. Why stop now? The Jameis prop over 277.5 passing yards, basically, you know, -110. So flat there. I like that. I think, you know, Carolina's defense, especially Bruce Irvin's out again. I just think Carolina's defense is overrated. I think they got lucky last week with a lot of inaccurate throws by Goff. I think Winston.
Well, you know, we know anything about Winston. He won't give him any opportunities.
And I think Winston's more of a down the field player anyway. And I think he goes over that in a win or a loss. I don't really care which one. I think he does well.
Yeah, I mean, he keeps up the zero big time throw, 8%, which is triple the league average, more than triple the league average. Turner worthy plays. He'll be
yeah. Big time throws, far less stable than turnover.
You'll be
really
going
plays,
to Tampa Bay, ordering an Uber, and seeing that Jameis Winston, your Uber driver,
I hate to see it,
will be arriving in 5 minutes.
Let's talk about the importance of this game, because this is a this is an AFC South that, NFC South that a lot of things happened this past week that were compelling, and ultimately, though, at the end, it became more of an AFC East than it should have.
Right.
We have right now New Orleans with a over 70% chance to win the division and an 80% chance to make the playoffs after they squeaked out a victory. They survived and advanced on Monday Night Football against Houston. Atlanta, as we well documented, just completely turned over the other night, folded like a long chair against Minnesota. So in theory, there would be an opportunity for Carolina and Tampa Bay to have, you know, to have some success in this division. And yet this game carries a lot of weight and can bury the team that will lose.
Well, that's not surprising, because if you are bad, you probably lose, and therefore 0-2. Not great. But the weird thing about it is that is a very optimistic way to look at it. I'm going to be pessimistic, as sometimes I do. All three of these teams, other than the Saints, are done, buried, bye, later, see ya, awful. This used to be, I thought, a really compelling and exciting and good division. And now it's Matt Ryan getting torched by free runners. It is Cam Newton, you know, throwing wildly inaccurate swing passes, and Jameis Winston just punting the ball into opposing defense's hands. So while it does carry a lot of weight, what I will point out is this. Should Carolina manage to win this game, yeah, it does more than double their chance of making the playoffs, going from 10% to 24%. But 24% still isn't great, and I'm still not bullish on that. And the same thing can be said for their chance of winning the division.
Right, and their projected win total, should they win, is a shade under 7.5, which is basically like their market number.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about that from, you know, close loss at home, and then what would presumably be a win at home, gets you just right back to where you were expected. That's a little bit underwhelming.
Right.
I think on the other side of the spectrum, if they were to lose, you're talking about two home losses in the first 2 weeks.
Not great.
I think that buries you. They would be at 6.4 wins as a projection there. If you bet they're under, if you faded them early in the season, you're looking pretty good there. Whereas for Tampa Bay, you know, we had their over 6.5 to start the season. If they were to win tonight, they would be at a projected 7. If they were to lose, they'd be at a projected 6. So again, it's sort of like whether we're back to expectation or not for Tampa Bay. I would say they'd be punching, if they were to win tonight, they'd be punching a little bit better than expectation, having a 50-50 proposition last week and something less than that this week. But it's still in an NFC where I think that there's a fair amount of teams better than them, including San Francisco, who played them last week. I still don't think that their outcome is particularly rosy, but it would be a step in the right direction.
Particularly rosy. Look at you. Wordsmith.
Wordsmith.
All right. That was Thursday night. I'm sure this game won't disappoint. I'm sure it'll be compelling and wonderful. Let's jump into the discussion of our favorite games.
One of them is already gobbled up.
we're gonna talk about the Monday night game anyways.
Yep. Yep,
because
sure.
It's worth talking about. You're not gonna be able to get Cleveland -2.5 anymore. You can get Trevor Siemian probably what does it move to?
Let's say probably -6, wouldn't you?
Yeah, at least. He's back.
Yeah. 5.5. Like, is he really 3.5 worse?
It's hard to be that much worse than a guy that averaged 4.3 yards per pass. Right. But if anyone could do it, Trevor Siemian's a guy that I would have a lot of faith in. We'll start with this. We'll start with the Jacksonville Jaguars heading to Houston. They are 9. They were 9-point dogs yesterday, moved to 9.5 now. This was one of the games that we wrote up for our spread picks column. You can go check it out and read all of the terrible writing on my behalf. Some of your half-decent writing is out there as well. Gardner Minshew is a guy who matriculated the ball down the field in college, right, with Mike Leach. Bunch of short passes, super accurate. And then basically did the same in this game, except that he was 5 for 5 on throws 10-plus yards downfield, had a couple of long bombs, threw like cover two shot, as Steve Palazzolo alerted me to yesterday. So there is some reason to believe that, now, the Chiefs defense is bad, but Gardner Minshew at least is going to take some opportunities if they are presented to him. And Houston is not the first team I think of when I go shut down coverage defense.
Yeah, they absolutely. I mean, well, for one, they, you know, J.J. Watt last game was his worst game, I think, that we've ever graded him at. Basically, you're talking about he had one pressure the entire game.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
You know, their secondary, they already
Ryan Ramczyk far better than anyone that the Jaguars have.
They cut their nickel corner after he gave up a play to Ted Ginn that sort of set up the game winning field goal attempt. You know, Kareem Jackson left. He went to Denver. Tyrann Mathieu left. He went to Kansas City. So their secondary, not stellar at all. Their linebackers, I think, Bernard McKinney got injured after an interception. So he's a question mark here. Minshew last week, 100% of his throws were accurate by our measure. He had 3 incompletions. One of them was batted down. 2 were dropped. He had 8% of his throws were big-time throws. 0% were negatively graded. 28% were positively graded. He was awesome. Even though, again, a lot of it was short stuff, he did show the capability of going long here. When you look at Houston, though, you know, Watson played terrific on Monday night, but he was under a ton of pressure. I mean, Laremy Tunstyle was not doing a particularly job with that that front
that's
four.
Why, which is, that's why you trade the house for him.
Yeah, well, and they got 4 good receivers. But if you look at Jacksonville, one of the things that Jacksonville does well is cover. Right, AJ Boye is a terrific corner. Jalen Ramsey is one of the better young players in the league in the secondary. You know, their linebackers are fast. Although, the other day I believe it was Miles Jack got kicked out of the game, so he'll be back this week. And then up front, I think they can take advantage of that offensive line. So for me, I don't know how you're laying almost double digit points here if you're Houston.
I'm going to sum all of that up into one thing, which is our PFF ELO ranking. The Jags are 19th. The Texans are 16th. That is not a 9-point difference make. So, I mean, you brought up a ton of good points. The couple of things that I will mention, Deshaun Watson, look, poor guy was just getting speared left and right. I mean, those last two plays, particularly the last one, he just got absolutely crushed. And that was against the Saints defense that I don't think has anywhere near the teeth that the Jaguars have, with Campbell, Ngakoue, Josh Allen up front. I should note that Ngakoue and Campbell are both questionable, but I think we're assuming that they play. So while Watson clearly the better quarterback and might be, I was thinking about this the other day, I think Deshaun Watson might be like my favorite player in the NFL right now. I just, you know, he's not the best player. He doesn't do things, you know, he doesn't throw the ball as well as some guys. He's not the most athletic guy in the NFL. But when you wrap his whole everything together, there might not be a guy that I enjoy rooting for more than Deshaun Watson.
Or dislike rooting against more.
Sure.
I mean, honestly, he breaks your back. The thing when we were betting against Houston a lot last year, the thing that saves people who are fading Houston, though, is his propensity to take negative plays. Sure. The sacks are a huge deal.
Six sacks.
The interception, like the one play that DeAndre Hopkins body slammed the guy was a terrible throw.
Yep.
Like his positives and his negatives are so, I mean, he's exactly like the ceiling for Jameis Winston, frankly, in terms of positive grade
throws. As a human as well.
As a human. Yeah. I mean, he's a terrific guy from everything it sounds. So, the thing is like Jacksonville is clearly capable of taking advantage of these things. And when you look at, you know, what Minshew offers at the quarterback position.
Well, he offers a fantastic mustache.
Yeah, well, there's that. But you think about this, like all the Jaguars wanted Bortles to do a season ago is simply hold serve. And I can't think of anything that personifies holding serve more than a 5.5 ADOT and a, you know, 2 yards for every air yard. Like,
yeah.
The Chark guy, the wide receiver on the outside,
DJ
Chark, they have some improvements here. And I just wonder why, you know, I just think early on in the season, we think we know more than we know. And if that's the case, I think you take the points here in favor of Jacksonville.
All right. So the we've made the point very soundly. I think the only counterpoint here is Sean Watson and J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins, all top tier guys that can single-handedly wreck a game. So I will just point that out. We'll leave that one and we'll move onward. And the next game that we're going to talk about is New England going to Miami. So the line here is ever increasing. I hesitate to even say that it's under 20 because it, I think, was 14.5 on the look ahead. It's now what, 18.5?
I think it was even bet down from 19. So I think 19 is where that was the line people drew in the sand.
Now, obviously, there's value on a home team getting that many points.
Yes.
That's not.
I mean, I think the Dolphins fail a few of those qualifiers, but yes.
Certainly. But like if any mathematical measure that you are using, that is sound, there's going to be some value there. I'm not sure I can stomach that because Ryan Fitzpatrick tossing up, you know, passes into the middle of the ether and then them coming down into the hands of the great coverage players for New England scares me a bit. There are a couple things, though, that do work in favor of either Miami or fewer points in this game, which is maybe the side that's better to look at. Total right now, 47.5.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is that it's Miami in September. It's going to be hot. It's going to be super humid. And I can't imagine that Bill Belichick feels the need, probably unlike he did at home against Pittsburgh, to throw the kitchen sink at the Miami Dolphins and his good buddy Brian Flores, who he probably wants to keep around for a little bit so he can, you know, run roughshod over them. So if there is one place to go, I might argue that the under, as much as that offends everything that I stand by, is the place to be.
Yeah, and it started out at 48.5. It's gone down a full point since. We've seen some indications that there's going to be some precipitation in Miami. That's certainly contributing to that play. For me, I think back, like, you know, last season was early in the season. We got we actually had an over in a Miami versus New England game because Miami was doing such a good job with efficiency offensively early on in the season. And New England just beat the brakes off of them, something like 31-7. Right. And so if that happens again, you're clearly under here. The hard part is that if Miami gives New England a game, what type of situation is it? Is it like last year when New England went to Miami and they won a thriller, in which case it was a high scoring game? Or is it something like last year in week 3 when New England went to Detroit, a team that was buried, dead, all that kind of stuff, and New England just simply like messed around the entire game and it ended up like 23-13?
Yes.
And that's clearly under as well. I like the side.
That game isn't happening.
I like the side.
I'm just pointing that out.
I mean,
that New England team was trying to figure itself out from a coverage standpoint, trying to figure itself out from a receiving standpoint. This is a different team. I do agree to a certain extent, though. Marcus Cannon not going to play, I don't think. Marshall Newhouse comes in. You're obviously not taking chances with Tom Brady. The only problem is that the Dolphins used to have Cameron Wake, who was at least a serviceable pass rusher. Now they really don't. The problem is the Dolphins stink.
They got Christian Wilkins in their first round this year. He's a pretty good player. They also, Charles Harris is a first round pick who has struggled mightily.
Right.
And so you're right. I was remarking this to Neil Hornsby when we were talking before. It was like Miami has players on their defense that should be good. Xavien Howard should be good. Minkah Fitzpatrick should be good. Rashad Jones should be good. Obviously, and then the Harrises and the Wilkinses of the world. I just don't know. Like, obviously, defense requires more players to be average than players to be elite. And then, of course, offensively, I mean, the real thing that could tank this game in terms of you're looking at an under is Ryan Fitzpatrick's penchant for keeping both teams close to scoring at all times.
Yep.
And that's tough.
So the way I see it, there are a couple things in our favor. New England maybe not trying as hard. Also, maybe just going with the run game, which was, despite what everyone thinks, was actually a vastly poor choice of play for them against the Steelers, -0.23. Expected points added poor per run play. And that maybe helps you. But on the other side, 47.5, you don't get the 48, right? Which is kind of rough. 48.5 would have been a lot better. So you're losing a little value there. And as you mentioned, Ryan Fitzpatrick. So are we both in agreement that Jacksonville trumps this one?
Yeah, I like the Jacksonville pick a lot better.
Jacksonville, the clear leader in the clubhouse at the moment. Next up, another under for you, because why not?
Yeah.
Dallas, Washington, under 46.5 at the moment. This was one that we actually talked about on Sunday night in a like mid-REM cycle state.
Yeah, well, we said that the line being 4.5 of the time seemed short. It's now out to 5. That's not a ton of value because there's not a lot of games land on 5, but still notable there. People like Dallas, and Dallas was great. Dallas last week, in terms of like we have a model basically were they running the correct play run or pass on second down. Dallas was, I think, something like 13 of 15. They ran the positive EV play, and they were successful on 2/3 of second downs as a result. That's a great sign, right? The play action, the fact that Prescott was a perfect passer when clean, all those things look great for Dallas right now. But the thing is, then we have Washington, who got out to a huge lead against the Eagles, right? 17-0. Their offense looked decent. I want to kind of fade a lot of those things, though. I think the Eagles struggled in covers. They struggled to tackle, et cetera, et cetera. I don't, Darius Geis is out. That means Adrian Peterson's going to get carries. And I think that's a recipe for an under. And then I think Dallas is going to probably try to lean on Zeke more this week because he's a week into it. He probably feels left out of the fun, et cetera, et cetera. So I think if Dallas rolls Washington, it might be something like 30-7. And we're talking about an under here. And so I think that's really the only side you can be on. This has actually gone up. It's more like, I think I've seen it at 47 some places. I think it's kind of the market overreacting to a lot of the games that were paced under last week that went over at the end for random reasons. So I like this game.
Kellen Moore was brilliant in that game. And when you say made the right decision on second down, what you're basically saying is this: on second and long, you pass. And if it's second and short, you run. And we don't see that. We see oftentimes it's this was a perfect example. I know we weren't going to talk about games that happened last week, but this is the perfect example. Falcons come out first play. Jake Matthews forgets to actually go on the field. The corpse of Jake Matthews gets left in the dust, gives up a sack, 2nd and 18. They run the ball. Gain no yards, 3rd and 18, punt, over. Game over, right? Right from the start.
Look, when you have Julio Jones and you can get half of those 18 yards back,
you have to run the ball to Devontae Freeman, who missed the correct hole many, many times in that game. So you want to make sure that you are taking the opportunity that best affords you a chance at converting. And on second and long, that is throwing a pass. That is not something that the Cowboys have been about. They have been very much about give Zeke the ball and let him get you on schedule, which 3rd and medium, 3rd and long is not where Dak Prescott excels. They have always been a very good team in 3rd and short because of the dual run option, because of the offensive line, but you are more likely to get a third and short by passing than by running.
Yep.
That is what you are saying, and that is what Kellen Moore took advantage of. I'm wary of the – look, they haven't had that successful an offense in a really long time, and you know how Jerry Jones gets excited, and he might just go to Kellen Moore and be like, look, I don't care who's angry.
Yeah.
You just keep this rolling. And, you know, we keep going, and that's a recipe for them scoring a ton of points. And the Redskins, rewatching that game, left a ton on the field in that Philly game. They could have scored. They had that one deep pass that was just overthrown by a couple of yards. There were a lot of opportunities for them to score. They're now, you know, they're home. That's tough.
Here's the thing I like about Washington in this game, though, with respect to the total. Washington's defense is not a terrible unit at all. You know,
and Philly is a fantastic offense.
We talk about the other side of that whole second down thing. We're going to talk about Philly. Philly was only successful on a little bit over the
burying the lead. 30,
well, I'm not going to talk about the decisions, but they were only successful on a little bit over the a little bit over 30% of their second down plays, and like that's partially obviously the offense and mostly the offense, but there's some defensive thing to that as well. I also think, when you look at sort of like the psychology of getting out to a 17-0 lead and sort of staying aggressive and then losing, like the pushback to that would be, okay, well, we just need to play more, you know, playing aggressively lost us a game. Let's play more conservatively. And I don't think the right thing to do, it might be what Washington ends up doing here. They play more conservatively. They run the ball more. They give Keenum safer throws, et cetera, et cetera. And that, to me, again, leads to this idea that Washington's going to play good defense on Dallas, slow them down a little bit. The Giants provided no resistance on Sunday. And then offensively, they're a little bit more buttoned up to try to keep it closer so that they don't have a repeat of what happened against Philly. All that to me suggests an under here.
Okay. Do you like it more?
No. It's going to take
a lot to win you over. Okay. I'm with you there. Next game. This is the best game of the week. The Rams at home, rematch of that ridiculous game in New Orleans in the NFC Championship, hosting the Saints. The Saints, ironically, got roasted by the refs again in week one. I can't imagine that happens again. There's got to be some mandate that went out league-wide, thou shalt not screw over the New Orleans Saints in this game. The Rams sort of very predictably hovering around a 3-2.5-point favorite in this game feels perfectly right. It's right what we talked about.
The Sunday show
on Sunday or Monday morning. I rewatched. I was so thoroughly embarrassed. I'm sorry. Next week, I can promise you this: I will be in better shape.
Well, the content was good. I thought our guessing of the numbers was good. I thought that both of us almost having a stroke was probably not the best content.
I don't think the content was great. So we're working this week to make the content better. So when you wake up on Monday, you'll have something that looks less terrible. But this game is very compelling. And one of the reasons it is compelling is that the Rams don't really seem to have righted the offensive ship that went so wayward at the end of last season. Though Cooper Kupp is back, though Todd Gurley is still playing and was actually quite efficient in that game, there are still some things that give you some pause here. New Orleans, on the other side, actually won in week one, as you mentioned, for the first time in forever. Drew Brees was fantastic. The tough thing here is that if they're basically equal, then why not take the Rams and, you know, that only 2.5 or minus 2.5.
Well, and as we discussed, I think privately,
I just almost had a stroke there.
There's a lot of things here that I think go against taking the Rams at minus 2.5, even though I think the numbers would suggest it's a decent play. First off, I don't think the Rams get a 3-point home field advantage bump.
Oh.
In any way, shape, or form. I think it's more like 2 points, maybe a point and a half.
Even now? I think Super Bowl.
Yeah, but like that stadium's like huge, and it's not like ever full when they play.
Look, I know a few things about Southern California, and I know that if you're bad, no one shows up. But if you're good, everyone's a fan.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you're from. You're from New York? Oh, but you live in LA now? Huge Rams fan now.
Go Rams. And then the other thing is, as you talked about, I think that New Orleans has the revenge angle, right? That's huge here. And not that, you know, that's ever baked into the numbers or anything, but, you know, that's something that's keeping me away from really liking this game on the side of the Rams. Now, that being said, I remember two seasons ago when New Orleans was the hottest team in football and the Rams were, I think, laying a point or two in LA. LA beat New Orleans straight up, covered that spread, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's always, like, when it comes to great team against very, very good team, we always seem inclined to go with great team, you know, first blush. And oftentimes it's the very, very good team with a few advantages, i.e. being at home, you know, that ends up winning this out. So I like this number where it's at. You know, if I had to bet it, I bet Rams and hold my nose and pray. But like at that point in time, you know, it's not one of my favorites of the weekend.
I think Sean Payton is one of the best three coaches in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Belichick, Andy Reid, certainly in that conversation. And he does something that Sean Payton does not do well, which is he goes for it on fourth and short. And the Rams did not in that game against Carolina when they should have. I don't remember the exact situation, but it was a very clear, so it was fourth and one. They think did they kick a field goal or punt? I can't remember.
They punted a fourth down that was egregious, I thought.
It was like right outside of field goal range, I want to say. It was poor. The Saints don't make those mistakes, especially in this game where revenge is so vital to the Saints. The Rams had a negative EPA per pass play against the Panthers. It was not solid. So I'm still nervous about the Rams. I have my fears have not been quelled there. So for that reason, despite the value, I think our power ranking number of the Rams still takes into account too much of the great Rams team that we saw, and I don't think that they are anywhere near that at this moment.
So talking about the video we had yesterday with Steve and Bruce, we're talking about preseason, right? How much of the Rams' struggles in the first week could be attributed to the fact that
no
one plays in the preseason, and we get a weekend, and now, you know, because, you know, I agree with you. I thought that they were not impressive. What I did like, though, is I did like Cooper Kupp. 10 targets, 7 catches. I'm trying to look at the number of first downs, but he seemingly was always available when Goff needed to throw to him in a big spot, and he did keep more drives alive than I think probably should have been kept alive based upon how good the quarterback was. So what happens, you know, if Goff and that offense just sort of finds their feet? They're at home. They're not playing, you know, three time zones away, et cetera, et cetera. I agree with you. I don't like the Rams as much as the power numbers indicate, but there is some reason to back them here.
I do agree. But
they're not Jacksonville.
The revenge factor.
They're no Jags.
It's tough for me. Okay. The next game to discuss, probably the second best game of the week, Seattle. Now this. Number has fluctuated a little bit. Seattle +4, Seattle +3.5. They're on the road against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh just embarrassed. I, on last week's pod, said I expect Pittsburgh to get trounced by the Patriots. But I am not all of a sudden no longer bullish on them for the season because I expect this to happen. They are not going to be at their best to start the season. And the Patriots are in this particular situation, especially in coverage. So I'm not letting that last week impact me a whole ton, but I think these two teams are basically equal. I think Russell Wilson is better than Ben Roethlisberger. That's not a controversial statement. He is better than Ben Roethlisberger.
For sure.
And so getting 4 points seems like a pretty decent side to be on.
Yeah. The pushback that I'll have is that I don't think that Seattle, the rest of Seattle's roster is anywhere near as good as Pittsburgh's. And while Pittsburgh struggled, you know, so if you look at this, like, why isn't this more like a 6 or 7 point spread? Well, you look, Pittsburgh got drilled on Sunday Night Football. Seattle won the other day against Cincinnati. Yeah. Now, they didn't cover the spread. They probably should have lost. They screwed us on the total, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, when I look at this, I think to myself, like, when I look at this game, I think to myself, okay, like, are there going to be edges that Pittsburgh can exploit? Well, Juju Smith-Schuster is a little down with an injury, right? Dante Moncrief's not particularly good. You know, the running game, you know, is fine, but doesn't matter that much. So my answer is kind of no, right? I don't think that there's like these glaring weaknesses on Seattle's side that Pittsburgh's going to be able to exploit. And then I look defensively and I think, okay, well, Pittsburgh's secondary is a little bit better. Their linebackers are a little bit faster with Devin Bush in there. They have a pretty decent interior pass rush. Seattle doesn't really have a lot of answers for those things other than how good Wilson is. And they still haven't really learned their lesson. They're still in sort of bottom part of the league in terms of making the right decision on second down, running the ball too much, all of that. So if you play Seattle here at Plus Sports, really just about the numbers, because the narratives that you're trying to build in are basically better quarterback getting points. And I think Big Ben is close enough to Russell Wilson, not necessarily to garner that immediately.
Well, here's the thing that I do not like, which is a team winning barely at home when they should have rocked their opponent, right? They were 10-point favorites practically at home. They barely squeaked that out versus a team that is a good team, that is, it should win their division, a division favorite, according to our simulations, just getting embarrassed coming back home.
Mm-hmm.
That is rough.
Mm-hmm.
That is rough to handle because this is a must-win game for the Steelers in many ways. It's a must-show-up game. Whereas for the Seahawks, it really isn't. The Rams also didn't look that great. The Niners didn't look that great. The urgency factor, I think, is a little rough. So I guess that one has no chance for you.
Well, I think it's a playable pick, but it's not, to me, it's not one that's like, okay, there's 17 different reasons why this is right. You know, I think this one is a numbers play. Home field advantage. Here's another sort of thing. Home field advantage is generally higher for Pittsburgh. It's more than 3 points. And so that's might be what the market's baking in, but home field advantage has decreased over the past number of years. True. And so are you overvaluing the what Pittsburgh has at Heinz Field? I would say probably. And Seattle, you know, the other issue is Seattle struggles traveling in September historically. I want to fade that because it's probably meaningless.
It's baloney.
So, yeah, I don't have an issue playing it. I don't like it as much as I like Jacksonville, though.
I mean, I was trying to think of it. So, because you have to commit to that type of mustache I'm talking about, Minshew. I was trying to think of who, Tom Selleck, obviously, Magnum PI, dude, just absolutely crushed
it.
Well,
who's the guy from the ranch? I can't remember his name.
I know exactly who you're talking about. Older guy?
Yeah.
Does those commercials?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Oh, this is great content right here.
This is. I'm curious.
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott, yes.
Sam Elliott's mustache is amazing.
Okay, so yeah. Sam Elliott, Tom Selleck. Now you have Gardner Minshew. But, I mean, it looks great on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
What sort of, would you ever?
No.
You'd never try?
No. The most time I have.
I've been very.
Stop.
My
stop.
Dad rocks a mustache.
My dad, too.
My voice just cracked. And I just am so worried I'd look absolutely embarrassing and terrible that I can't do it.
The only thing I'll leave the mustache every once in a while after I shave just to talk crap to myself in the mirror. And then I will shave it off.
I haven't shaved in a very, very long time because it is a waste. But anyways, I was just curious what it would take.
What it would take? Well, I mean, anybody can be bought.
To just really, because you have, it's not just I shaved everything but this little bit of scruff here.
Yeah.
You really have to.
As Jared Allen once said, the mullet isn't a hairstyle, it's a lifestyle.
It's true.
The mustache is a
lifestyle. So is that type of mustache. All right, let's talk about the Sunday night game just because it's a game that is on Sunday night. So you have to watch it.
Yep.
And so we're going to talk about it a little bit. The Falcons are at home. They are getting a point and a half. Usually when this happens, both of us lose our shirts and pants because of excitement and cannot wait to take advantage of the fact that Matt Ryan and Julio Jones are both top five players, that there's all this speed on the defense. And then they come out, they run the ball on every second and long play. They kick a ton of field goals. They punt the ball all over the field.
And yet they still have a chance to throw a fade to Julio Jones at the end to win. He drops it.
He drops it in the game against the Vikings. They had a chance to get it, you know, back into an actual competition. They throw a jump ball to Luke Stocker, I believe. Is that who it was at tight end?
Yeah.
May he rest
unreal.
In peace. So we're not going to do that here. In fact, I am going to make the claim. I don't think it's necessarily backed up by the numbers here. But the Eagles are becoming closer and closer to the offense that can be a Super Bowl champion again. And based on what the Falcons defense looked like, the Eagles seem to be prepared to absolutely run train on them. Now, you have something for me to dissuade me of this fact.
Yeah, I mean, I think I the Eagles on second down last week made the correct decision less than a third of the time.
Don't do that to me.
And were successful less than a third
don't
of the time.
You besmirch the good name of Doug Peterson.
We love
Doug. Not like, in this house.
Doug makes a – and this is like a historic thing for the Eagles. The Eagles make very sound decisions on fourth down. They make very sound decisions in the offseason on who to acquire, who to trade
for. They also make sound decisions on third down.
They make solid decisions on third down. They play third down as if they're going to go for it on fourth down.
Yep.
They run the ball way too much on second down. And – like for a Falcons defense that like just needs help.
Yeah.
You're just giving them like it's like
giving them a chance.
You're playing with your basketball with your younger sibling and you're just giving them buckets so they'll stay in the game.
Now the reason we didn't notice that. So in 2017 Carson Wentz was the best quarterback on third down
by a lot.
125 passer rating, like close to 50% conversion rate. It was ridiculous. And that's why you don't notice the second down running as much. Now in 2018, sorry, last season, that fell off a cliff, as mm-hmm. you would expect, because third downs are an erratic statistic. And the Eagles suffered as a result. Now in game one against the woeful Redskins, he was electric on third down. I mean, they were roasting the Redskins on third down. DeSean Jackson had like 15 feet of space on every third down. Zach Ertz was continuously open. And he was back to his 2017 self on third down.
Yep.
I don't think the Falcons are going to pose a threat to that in any way, shape, or form. But I do understand where you're coming from. And on a game-to-game basis, the variation in what can happen on third down is high. So you do want to look for things like second downs, which are going to happen quite frequently. And making the correct decision there is going to help them press their advantage, especially on the road. So that is concerning. The one thing with the Eagles, and I wonder if this plays a part, is because they are so willing to go for it on fourth down, I think makes the second down run to them more palatable. And one of the reasons that it is such a minus EV play is that teams do not consider going for it on fourth down nearly enough.
Yeah.
And the Eagles also are a better than average team, I believe. I'm not sure if this was the case in week one. But over the past years have been better than average actually at running on second and long.
Yeah, they have more success, I believe, than – well, no, I think in 2017 they did.
Definitely in 2017.
But in 2018, I don't think – they frankly in 2018 were not as effective of an offense as Carson Wentz's grades and efficiency would suggest. The thing that I'm looking at here – so the total here is 51, right? And is while I don't know if the under is like we're shaded under, it's not playable, but the thing I like the Falcons to actually give the Eagles a game in the sense of keeping the game close. Like when Minnesota got a blocked punt, then they had an interception on the first two drives. That's how the Falcons got down 14 to nothing. They didn't get down 14 to nothing by giving up 80-yard drives and being terrible. They only allowed a 35% success rate on early down run plays. And, you know, the Vikings dumped expected points by running the ball to Dalvin Cook. And they ran it 75% of the time on early downs. Like, the Falcons were fine defensively the other day. Sure. It was really that their offense didn't give them any help. I'm not saying bet the Falcons or anything. I'm just saying, like, in this particular game, I can see why the spread is only 1.5 in the Eagles' favor, and it started 1.5 in the Falcons' favor.
Yep.
Because I think I need to see more from the Eagles, even though I do think they'll be very good this year. B, I also think the Falcons are maybe, as stupid as it sounds, a play or two away from having that game be actually close the other day.
Jesus. Just kind of pulling me back in.
I know.
Man, I'm not going with you to that dark place, because there's nothing worse than starting out my Sunday watching the Falcons just throw away the game in the first 3 minutes. That was hard to watch. Now the thing for me for the Eagles that pushes them over the top in my mind and allows me to get past the second and long, which I really hate. It's really a pet peeve of mine. Doug Peterson, number one in my book, loves ice cream, loves going for it on fourth down.
Yeah,
man after my own heart. What pushes them over the top for me is seeing what DeSean Jackson adds to that offense. They have not had a guy like DeSean Jackson, and he is still so fast. I mean, the Washington Redskin defensive backs were petrified of DeSean Jackson in the game. It was comical. They were giving him on 3rd and 10, 15 yards of space. He was running just all over them, and I am not in any way. He is going to just toast the Falcons secondary repeatedly, and that Eagles offensive line giving Wentz the time to step back there. Wentz looked tremendous throwing the ball downfield. That is the reason I think that I just could not bring myself to take the Falcons as home dogs.
Yeah.
All right, last one.
Interestingly, is
you have more on this?
No, I mean, is there a player who has been that oldish in the NFL who's kept his speed that impressive? I mean, since like maybe Daryl Green,
maybe that's who I was thinking of.
He is so impressive. Good on the Eagles for getting him on the cheap.
I remember when I was just starting to play fantasy football, and DeSean Jackson was my guy. Yeah. I had him every single year. I love that guy. And the crazy thing about him is he is a special deep threat, but he's also like he's not Ted Ginn.
Yeah.
He can actually run routes at the intermediate levels and be successful. So he is more than just a deep threat. I think that is, if he stays healthy, that's the question, right? That is a humongous addition for the Philadelphia Eagles. Browns, Jets.
So
where do we know where this has moved yet?
I've been unable to find a number for it.
What do you think it gets?
So maybe that's what we talk about. Because we, in our picks column this morning, we liked Cleveland -2.5. Seemed good at the time, and now it seems a lot better.
Seems good because it's already been purchased.
Yeah. So, with Simeon in, so the question is where was Darnold last year? Darnold was about a win and a half above replacement. If Simeon's
a slightly above replacement player.
Yeah. So over the course of a season, talking about 30-ish points divided by 16, so maybe 2 points, so maybe 4.5.
I think it gets to 5.
Well, I think the market might overreact to it, but I think the combination of the Jets being at home, the dysfunction that is the Cleveland Browns, the fact that Simeon's a little bit better than replacement, he's won games in this league before, and the fact that Darnold wasn't going to get much done without Quincy Enunwa, Chris Herndon, and Adam Gase as his coordinator to begin with. Like the difference, it's not like going from Tom Brady to somebody, right? You're knocking a wheel off of a broken car to begin with. So
they're going to feed Le'Veon Bell the ball in this game, and it's going to be tremendous.
Well, so the question mark becomes, what happens to the total? I think the total dives here for that very reason.
Oh, absolutely. Wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Which we like the under to begin with, a little bit better than break even.
It's going to move down.
Yeah,
I think it crosses 45, to be honest.
Yeah, so
that's how bad Trevor Siemian is. Now the thing is, Sam Darnold was atrocious. So you can also make the claim, look, Trevor Siemian's bad, but so is Sam Darnold. They're not that much worse of a team. Though I would say that the Jets have the potential to just be such garbage and really not work out well. And Trevor Siemian, I would presume, because Sam Darnold is a young quarterback, has been taking all the reps, probably has no reps. So that being said, I take back everything that I just mentioned. How do the Browns lose this game? I think the way the Browns lose this game is not too dissimilar to what happened in Tennessee, except I think it flips. So in Tennessee, Baker Mayfield played great for 3 quarters. Yep. And the fourth quarter, miscommunications with Odell and Jarvis Landry, throws really terrible looking passes. And all of a sudden, the game gets out of hand on the road. In this game, I think they press a little bit to start. I don't think things start so great. And they kind of have to battle. They battle all the way back. And then drive to win the game, matriculating the ball down the field. Throws one up over the middle to Odell, hits him in the watch. Caroms off the watch because it's,
very expensive. Because why wouldn't it?
Titanium watch in a weird direction that would never be conceivable if it just hit his wrist. Intercepted, pick six. Jets end up winning the game all because of the watch.
So good.
Would that be the greatest
I mean,
that'd be so funny.
Yeah. I mean, this is why, like, taking a lot of these stats into context is huge, because when you look at Mayfield on Sunday, he had over 30% of his passes were positively graded, which is generally, if you hold that over a whole season, you're having a pretty good year. Only 13% of his throws were negatively graded, but over half of those negatively graded throws were turnover worthy, whereas
all of them were caught,
whereas only 2.6% of all of his throws were big time throws. We know big time throws are less stable than turnover worthy plays. Turnover worthy plays are less stable than negatively graded throws. So if he maintains the positive negative split, I think things will regress a little bit for him. There's also the fact that Tennessee's defense is pretty solid. I don't think the same thing as we wrote about in the article. Yeah. Talking about Brian Poole, you're talking about Tremaine Johnson, you're talking about Daryl Roberts as the three corners there. They also don't have a ton of edge presence, right? Cleveland's, you know, when Ross Tucker was on, he was worried about Cleveland's tackles, right? Jets are not going to be able to take advantage of those tackles. I think that we're, you know, if you got in at Cleveland minus 2.5, you're sitting pretty. And, you know, I don't know what would be the spread at which you'd buy back some Jets and try to take a middle. I don't know.
I'm not.
A touchdown? Seven?
Seven, probably.
I mean, I sort of agree with you there. If you can, and I don't think the books are ever going to open you up to that.
That huge of a middle is just not going to happen.
Well, with two key numbers. So
I bet on Trevor Siemian before. I know what that feeling is like. It is not fun. The Browns are interesting, though, because there was clearly some miscommunication between Baker and Odell. And you know, Odell's probably still not healthy. Baker's on the injury report.
Strange, because Odell knew what time it was every time. So he should have been in the right place at the right time, given his equipment.
Funny. I can't believe that watch cost so much. That's so ridiculous. Why was the deal like, hey, you can have the watch, but you have to wear it in the game?
I don't know.
What would possess you to wear a watch like that if you were an NFL player in the game? If I said, hey, here's a $300,000 watch, but you have to wear it in the game, would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'd probably sell it.
Yeah. Right. I wouldn't wear it again. Yeah. What if they said you have to wear it for at least 5 games?
Well, I thought he was just trying to be different. Like, if you watch, like, I just remember Teddy Bridgewater used to have a watch during practice, and he would, you know, time things and stuff like that. So maybe it was just one of those things where he's like, oh, I think this looks rad on me, so I'm gonna wear it out. And I
just think it looks sweet.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I'm all for that. The issue is that you know the spotlight is on you.
Yep.
You know that you've proven absolutely nothing. That is
both Odell in Brown or in the Giants for in terms of team success and the Browns in general.
That's my point. I just think it's very tone deaf. If Tom Brady went out there wearing a watch, I would, you know, that's fine, right? He can do anything he wants because he's Tom Brady. But you need to be a perfect citizen here, because until you win something, you got, and then you can't get all pissed off when people ask you about it. That's the other thing. Like, you got to have some foresight.
Yeah.
And for the record, I am a huge Odell Beckham fan. I am really hopeful that this works out. I hope they get some reps and get back on the same page. Okay. Any more that you want to talk about the games, or are we good to lock this in?
Jacksonville's the lock of the week.
So it is Child Cancer Awareness Month, I believe.
Okay.
So hopefully we can lock this one in. Give some money to support children's cancer research and all the good things that people are doing for them. It's affected my family quite a bit, something I'm very passionate about, and would really be great to do. So if you're out there and you're making a bet, whatever it is, you know, be prepared to give some away to a cause that matters, that is more important than you buying, you know, an extra cheeseburger the next time you go stuff your face.
That's right.
It won't hurt.
One hurt.
All right, Jacksonville's locked in. Let's close it out here. Cincy, why? We got any stories?
Well, I do.
From the why?
Yeah, recently? So what is it? Is it Tuesday? It's normally Wednesday where all the people play. But for some reason, it was Tuesday.
An open gym, like, get together.
Yeah, yeah. So Tuesday, music blaring, people playing some intense 3-on-3, people claiming that they own the gym, et cetera, et cetera.
The best part, I used to play like the pickup at my local gym on Saturdays, and I used to do this as a kid, and I was like, you know, the only person under 18 there. But the the arguments were just amazing.
Dude, unreal.
The arguments here in this gym in Cincinnati were sensational. We were just playing one-on-one off to the side, and we got a visit from James Harden, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, right. So this little guy shooting baskets, kind of like James Harden, left-handed, kind of like the push shot kind of thing.
I'm kidding, because James Harden's actually really good at shooting the basketball, and this thing was like a knuckler.
Yeah, but it went in a bunch of times. But he left the court for like 2 minutes. So then you and I started playing one-on-one, thinking that this was like our time. And then he came back in,
opportunity.
And then he started just playing over us, and finally, like, had the decency to ask us to play 21, which I know irritates you.
I hate it's 21 sucks, man. When it's three people,
yeah,
it really sucks all the time. Because if you play defense, you are just giving the other person that's not playing defense the ball. So like, I can't sit there and not do something. So I go play defense. So I play defense for like the first 10 minutes of each game. It's a joke. It's a waste of my time, especially when the other person smells bad.
Yeah, and that was another thing. So you don't want to play defense on him. You also don't want to defend such a broke shot.
Really nice guy. Wish him all the best. We're being very mean here, but I did have to.
Well, the PFF guys did sweep the three 21 games.
This is true.
Yeah.
Thank God we won. So that's it. That's me being rude and mean about people who don't smell
good. Who aren't here to defend themselves.
All right. Enjoy the week. We'll be back with you late or early, I guess, Monday morning. And we'll drink some energy drinks beforehand. Thanks for stopping by. We'll see you guys. In the dark, you shine.
People notice a healthy smile, but maybe you have tooth sensitivity, bleeding gums, or acid-weakened enamel. Sensodyne, Parodontax, and Pronamel are trusted specialty toothpastes created to help improve your oral health. For tooth sensitivity, choose Sensodyne. Bleeding gums, get Parodontax. For acid-weakened enamel, Pronamel is the toothpaste for you. Sensodyne, Parodontax, and Pronamel. Trusted specialty toothpastes to help bring home your healthy smile. Visit Ibotta to earn cash back.